Erev Tov. So we're in the middle of the topic of warming up food on Shabbos, and we basically said that there are two methods of warming up food on Shabbos. One of them is Shehiyah, and the other is Hachzara. Shehiyah means cooking the food from before Shabbos, or leaving the food from before Shabbos into Shabbos on a heat source. So we mentioned that min ha-Torah, it's perfectly permissible to leave raw food from before Shabbos into Shabbos on a flame. We mentioned that the reason that this is mutar, because we hold like Beis Hillel, that while there is a din of Shvisas Adam, and there is a din of Shvisas Behema, there's no din of Shvisas Kalim, and therefore it's permissible to leave the food from before Shabbos into Shabbos. However, Midrabbanan, the Rabbanan were concerned that if a person did this, that maybe he would come to stoke the coals. In order to cook up the food even faster, because he'll come home after davening, and he'll be hungry, and he'll see that since the food at the onset of Shabbos wasn't really cooked that much, so when he comes home from shul, maybe he won't be fully cooked, and he'll stoke the coals to accelerate the cooking, and that will be a violation of two isurim daraisa if that occurs. This is daraisa of havara, of combustion, and bishul, of cooking bishul. So therefore, they said don't do it because of gzeirah shamayachta b'dichol. But the Mishnayos and the Gemara in Shabbos in Perek Gimel of Shabbos say that if you do one of four things, then you basically neutralize the concern of gzeirah shamayachta b'dichol. So we've done three out of the four. The first was that at the onset of Shabbos, if the food is ma'achal ben drusoi, there's no concern because it's already mostly majority cooked enough that you would already eat it ayde atchak, and presumably also by the time you come back it'll be fully cooked, so you don't have to worry. Secondly, if it's let's say it's not ma'achal ben drusoi yet, it's still less than ma'achal ben drusoi at the onset of Shabbos, but if you did what's called grifa, you remove the coal, or you did the modern equivalent of using a hot plate that has no knobs, it's just an on-off type of hot plate. So there's no concern of gzeirah shamayachta b'dichol. You're not going to stoke any coals. There are no coals. There's nothing to stoke. There are no buttons. There's nothing to turn. The third alternative was kitima, which is putting ash on the coals, which was a heker. It was a sign and a reminder not to stoke the coals. And we said that the modern equivalent to that, according to the Minhag HaOlam, is based on Rav Moshe Feinstein, is the blech. It's a sheet of metal that's placed on top of the stovetop, and that sheet of metal will remind you that today's Shabbos, you're not going to stoke, you're not going to turn the knobs. And again, technically, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, all you have to do is cover the fire. You don't even have to cover the knobs. But he suggests, if you can, to cover the knobs as well. So that's really what we're up to. The fourth heter is called Kedera Chaita. Now, this fourth heter, which I'm going to explain to you in a moment, is not something that everyone agrees applies today. Okay, but in the time of Chazal, it was universally accepted. But today, you'll see why in a moment why it may not apply. This kedera chayta means a raw dish, a raw food. It was basically, if at the onset of Shabbos, the food was completely raw. So what are you saying? Okay. You're saying one of two things. Either you're saying, I'm completely disorganized and I have no idea how to plan for Shabbos. That's one thing that you might be saying. The other thing you might be saying is, no, I am very organized. And what am I doing? I'm saying that I have no need for this food tonight. And that's the assumption. The assumption that Chazal make is if you're putting raw food on the fire before Shabbos, you're not saying you're disorganized. What you're saying is that you're making a statement. You're basically saying, this is food that I'm not going to use tonight. So, if this is food you're not going to use tonight, because it's raw, right? And the only way it's going to be really cooked well is when? By tomorrow morning. So, therefore, there's no concern that you're going to stoke the coals, because there's no motivation to stoke the coals. Why are you not motivated to stoke the coals Friday night? I'm not going to eat it. So why would I stoke the coals? And it's going to be ready tomorrow morning. So therefore, Kedera Chaita was another way to go. And in fact, it was so acceptable that, let's say you had food that you started to cook even a little bit before Shabbos. So at the onset of Shabbos, your cholent, as an example, was not Kedera Chaita. It wasn't raw. But it wasn't yet Machal Ben Drusoi. So if the cholent was like this, it wasn't raw, and it was not yet Machal Ben Drusoi, and it was an open fire, would you be allowed to leave the cholent this way on the fire? You would not be allowed. So all you would have to do, you know what the trick is? Just take some raw meat and throw it into the cholent, even though the cholent is already, you know, cooked a bit already. But even though the process has started with this cholent, you can sort of press the reset button by throwing in this raw meat, and you're sending the cholent back to its raw state, ki'ilu, and you're saying, this cholent I'm designating for tomorrow. I have no interest in it tonight, and therefore you would be able to leave it on the open fire.
If that raw meat doesn't happen to cook through by morning, would you be allowed to remove it from the cholent? Or do you have to, like, take everything but it.
You would be able to.
You'd be able to remove it.
Yeah, you mean it's raw, like it'll be totally
like,
raw,
like,
or
it's still at a point where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily eat it.
I don't know if it's possible, but okay, let's say.
Just saying.
You know, they say it was still raw, actual like raw.
Like, I don't know how raw raw would be because I'm not.
If it's unedible, you're not gonna eat it. Then I agree with it. Over here. If it's mixed in very well. If it's a big chunk that stands out, then it wouldn't be borer. Borer is something that is considered a mixture. But if it's like a big chunk of meat that's for some reason never cooked. Now there are some poskim who argue that this last heter does not apply with modern cooking implements. Rav Heinemann. From Baltimore, he's the Rav HaMachshir in Baltimore with the Star K. So he argued that we should not. He was the Mekel. Rav Heinemann argued from Baltimore. He argued that even though modern equipment does cook things very fast, and if you put on a raw cholent before Shabbos, totally raw, it's very possible that it'd be ready to eat Friday night. Nonetheless, since the heter's on the books, it's okay. So Heinemann is still, he's makel. He says you can use the heter today. However, a prominent posik from the early, from the first half of the 20th century, was Rav Yosef Elio Henkin Zatzal. And Rav Yosef Elio Henkin said, no. He said, it's true, there's a heter, but the heter was, if it makes sense. Today, since we have cooking implements that cook very quickly, so he was not a fan of using Kedera Chaita. I would tell people, in as much as there are perfectly valid and useful alternatives, I would suggest using those. And I would try to dissuade them from using the Kedera Chaita. But if someone did use it and you were eating at their home, you should have no hesitation in allowing. Of course you should eat shmutter. Of course you can enjoy it and eat the food. As long as they're passing, you know, that it's fine. As long as they really have a sock that they think it's fine.
So if you are in the situation where, like, you can make your cholent too late or whatever, and it's completely raw for the onset of Shabbos, so could you just, like, would you, like, I don't know, take off the knob or, like, tape down the knob or something, and then it would make it to, like, grief or something?
So removing the knob doesn't make it grief. It would have to be a, but you can make a blech.
And it's on a crack, it's in a crack.
So you take out the insert, you line the bottom and the walls with like two layers of foil, so it should be thick. Mm-hmm. And then you reinsert the insert. And that's your blech. Yeah. So, you know, you can make a blech with the crock pot. Just what you should do is make sure that some of the foil is hanging out over the side, so you could see that there is some type of blech there. And if you can, ideally cover the knob as well. I actually asked Rav Lichtenstein about this, and he said, yeah, this is the blech. That's how you make the blech for the...
I've seen people do that, but I didn't realize why they did it.
Yeah, that would cover that problem.
Was
your
cooking stuff for any modern cooking implement? Because slow cookers and crock pots aren't usually going to that night.
It's an interesting question. It may also depend on the crock pot, but a lot of the, you know, the high lows, the one, when it's on high, it could cook pretty quickly. Does anyone have experience with this? I think 4 or 5 hours would be enough on high to cook it. It would be ready. It's interesting. Like, do you argue, like, for example, is that 4 or 5 hours, if at the onset of Shabbos you put it in, and 5 hours later it's going to be ready, so that's way past your meal. But it's not way past Cholent time. Right? As everyone knows, Friday night can be Cholent night. It's not Cholent in physics, it's just Cholent in Cholent. You know, it's all Cholent. So, I don't know. The point is well taken. I have to share. Did I even tell you the crockpot story?
Yes.
I told it to you? Okay, good. When did I tell you the crockpot story?
Months ago.
I was giving a shiur in Alon Shvut a number of years back to some family. You know, the adults have every Shabbos they invite different rabbanim to give shiur. So I was giving a shiur, and there was a mixture of British and South Africans and Australians and Americans in the shiur. So there was a woman. I'm pretty sure she was from South Africa, I think. Either South Africa, but I'm pretty sure it was South Africa. And she asked me, what's the deal with slow cookers? We were talking about this topic, and she wanted to know what the deal with slow cookers were. So I said, well, when dealing with crock pots, this is the law. So she said, what did you call me? Anyway, so it's good. I noticed because you said slow cookers and crock pots. I thought that was a good deal. I have to say that in the future. You know, slow cookers and crock pots.
Is this the only heads up for a crock pot? Being used on it's not using the Tanai thing? Because if it is, then we should be making it to a left.
Well, you know, if at the onset of Shabbos the food is already machal ben drusai in the crock pot, then you're fine. Right? If it's machal ben drusai or more, you're home free.
But in the event it's between machal ben drusai and raw, we should be making
right,
it.
Right, correct. If at the onset of Shabbos it is not yet machal ben drusai and it's not really raw either, then you definitely got to use a blach. You know, you have to do this.
What is the word blach actually mean?
A cover.
It's Yiddish?
Yeah, Yiddish.
I wasn't sure what it was, but basically something built a blach actually on top of the stove. It was built on bricks, and then on top of that, it had like a plate, like a warming plate. I think it looked like it was a heating plate, but it was like elevated with heating bricks. I wasn't sure what it was.
Maybe they want to burn the stove top. Yeah. Probably. Right. That's what I imagine. Yeah. Okay. So far we understand how to do shehiyah. Right, we mentioned leave the food from before Shabbos into Shabbos. And then you have these four methods to do this. Now, I just want to point out over here that what I've talked about with you until this point is the bare minimum, like the b'dieved. Like if you needed to, this is what you could do, and halachically, this is fine. But Poskim still write that there is an ideal and proper way to have food go from before Shabbos into Shabbos. And basically they say that one should try extremely hard to reach these standards. And what is it? Number one, that all food that you're leaving on a heat source from before Shabbos into Shabbos, all food should be fully cooked. Mavushal called sarko, not just machal ben drusai, but mavushal called sarko by the onset of Shabbos. That's number one. I'll explain why in a second. And number two, it should always be on some form of covered heat source or on some type of goruf instrument, like a hot plate that has no knobs. Okay, always those two things should be satisfied. The reason for this is as follows. Let's pretend for a moment you did one of the heterim that I mentioned up until this point, and the food was not fully cooked at the onset of Shabbos. So it's very easy to make a mistake and end up violating an issakaris. Like, for example, let's say the food at the onset of Shabbos is machal ben drusai. So we said, okay, leave it on the open fire, fine, great. Let's say someone comes in and says, you know, that shalom smells really good. I want to get a better whiff. They lift up the lid. Can they put the lid back?
Yeah.
No, they can't. Because if they do, then they're accelerating the cooking. But people don't remember. They'll put the lid down. They'll put the lid back. If it's on a, even if it's on a blech, you have the same concern. And moreover, let's say you move it around on a blech or on a hot plate. And the food's not fully cooked. The heat is not evenly distributed on a blech or on a hot plate. So when you move it around, it's very possible that you're moving it to a more intense heat in its new zone. So if you've done that, what have you also done? You've also accelerated the heating process by moving it around. So again, you've run into this problem. So in order to avoid this, if the food is fully cooked at the onset of Shabbos, you don't have this problem. Okay. And secondly, why would you need a blech or hot plate always? Because people sometimes take things, the hot plate and blech, or the heat, or food on top of a heat source, I'm sure if you've seen in your own homes, it's a happening place. There's a lot going on over there. People sometimes, you know, have to make room and move things off and put them on, and if it's not fully cooked, you can't put it back. But if it is fully cooked, and you have a hot plate or a blech, so under certain circumstances, which we'll talk about, you can return it to the covered heat source or to the hot plate. So therefore, Post can say you should make it a rule in your home that just to be safe, at the onset of Shabbos, make sure that the food is fully cooked and resting on a covered heat source or on something that's garuf, that has the status of garuf, like a hot plate with no without any knobs. We good? So far, so good? Yeah.
The two reasons of why we need to be extra careful is they said kareis, and because in order just to allow us practically to return food to the spot.
Also the kareis.
Right.
Both official. Now, there's an interesting thing that people like to do. It makes sense. People like fresh food. Right? Fair enough. Imagine you go to a restaurant and you order roast chicken. And they tell you, and you ask them, is it fresh? They said, yes, it's fresh. It was cooked today. I said, today? Like, when today? And they say, oh, we finished cooking it two hours ago. How would you feel?
Not so fresh.
Okay, but not so fresh. So sometimes people, they'll cook the food from before Shabbos into Shabbos. We've been talking about pretty much the stovetop. But what about the oven? Can one use an oven to perform shehiyah? So let's take the case. You take a roast, you leave it in the oven from before Shabbos into Shabbos. You take chicken, and you leave it in the oven from before Shabbos into Shabbos. So again, if at the onset of Shabbos, the chicken or the roast is already machal ben drusoi or more, so is there any problem in leaving it from before Shabbos into Shabbos? What would you say? Al pi halacha, is that okay? It's okay. Minatara and midrabanan. Right, Minatara, you'll allow to leave it from before Shabbos into Shabbos. And Midrabanan, there's no Gzeira Shem Yachta, because it's already Machal Ben Drusai by the onset of Shabbos. The only thing you have to be concerned about is not to open up the oven door on Shabbos until you know 100% certain that the chicken is cooked. Because if it's not cooked, or the roast is not cooked, so you open the oven door. Now, wait, what are you stuck with? You can't close the door. Because again, if you close the door, you're going to accelerate the cooking. So you just have to make sure, you have to know, like, okay, a roast takes X amount of time, a chicken takes X amount of time, and I know I'm going to wait until that time, and then I'll open up the door. Fine. So let's say I know that at a certain time, Friday night, I can already open up the door, and the chicken is going to be totally cooked, the roast is going to be cooked the way I like it. What problems might I have in opening up the door? Okay, A, maybe it will cause the fire to go on in the oven. Very often, I'm sure you've noticed in ovens, whether they're electric or gas, they don't stay on all the time. They have cycles, right? There's a thermostat, and once it reaches a certain temperature, it goes off. And when the temperature goes down, so the thermostat kicks it back on again, and it goes on. So if at this moment it's off, and I open up the door, what am I releasing from inside the oven? All the heat, right? The cold air is going to rush in, and then the thermostat's going to kick on, and it's going to turn on the oven, and either the fire will go on or the electricity will go on, and will cause the cause an issue. So how do you deal with that? So there are two ways of dealing with it. One method is to simply have a timer attached to your oven. Shabbos clock. And basically work it out that you know at this such and such time your roast will be cooked enough, your chicken will be cooked enough, and the timer will shut it off. Okay? That's great. But not everyone has timers on their ovens, but there's another device which I guess is an akin to the timer. Again, it's a mechanical solution, and that is what's now known as the Shabbos oven. Do you know what I'm talking about? Apparently, at least in the United States, I don't know if in other countries yet, but in the United States they're selling, I think, like General Electric or something. Like, I don't know how this happened, but now they're selling ovens that are called Shabbos ovens.
Sabbath mode
ovens. Okay, now, some people think that the Sabbath mode is like this magical oven that you could just like put, you know, raw food in on Shabbos and cook it. No, that's not what Sabbath mode means. It's not like, you know, the Hasidic tale where it's Shabbos here, but not Shabbos here. It's Shabbos in the oven. But the Sabbath mode, what does it mean? It means that if the light's on, the light's going to stay on. If the heat's on, the heat's going to stay on. There aren't any changes that occur when you open up the door. So that's a big advantage. I think that it's worthwhile to buy the Sabbath mode oven for Shehiya purposes. I don't think it's going to help for Hafzar, but it's going to help for Shehiya. So that when you open up the door, nothing is going to kick on, it's just very, very, very simple and easy solution. The only thing is, again, you have to make sure that the chicken or the roast is fully cooked. If it's not, you've got to take it out, and that's the end of it. You can't close the door. You cannot close the door. Or at least, you know, leave the door open and let it continue to cook. But you cannot close the door.
If it's fully cooked, there's no way of returning it? Or
There is. You cannot take it out and put it back.
Can you accelerate its heat, so to speak? Like, if the chicken is fully cooked, can you put the cover back on?
That's also a great question. Okay, what's being raised here is I'm sort of portraying that if it's fully cooked, so now you all these problems go away in terms of closing the door. But the question that's being raised, is that really true? So Rav Moshe Feinstein brings down the Machlokas Achronim. And it happens to be a bit kiddush to say that by putting the lid back on, it's considered Mechzikim of Ashel. You know, and the closing the oven door will be a problem of Mechzikim of Ashel on this food. But yes, it's true that there is a day in Achronim that would have a problem with it, and if you can avoid it, avoid it. But he just leaves it. He doesn't give you a psak. He just says it's machlokas. But that's not. You know, I wouldn't make a gzera on top of that. You know, there's no reason at this point already. The isser, the worst that the person will violate is a drabanan of Mechzikim of Ashel. And that itself is a machlokas, whether that isser will even exist. And certainly there's no reason to make a gzera on top of that. That maybe one will take the lid off and put it back.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, I don't know if I understood this correctly. So, if you put some stuff in the oven before Shabbat, and you put things continuing Shabbat, and then you want to take it out and it's fully cooked, is there any problem at all of opening up the oven?
So, if it's on Sabbath mode, you open up the oven door, take it out, you're fine. If it's not on Sabbath mode, so if you have it on a Shabbos clock and it's shut off, that's also fine. If you don't have a Sabbath mode oven and you don't have a Shabbos clock, so here's the question. Okay, if you're opening it up, so isn't it going to trigger the thermostat and make it go on? So Rav Shimon Eider, have you guys ever seen a book called The Laws of Shabbos, Hilcha Shabbos by Rav Shimon Eider? So it used to be like the book that everyone would read on Hilcha Shabbos. He was able to do the first 11 out of the 39. He did the Siddur de Pas, and he worked very closely with Rav Moshe Feinstein. That book, in a big way, it embodies the Mesorah of Rav Moshe Feinstein on the first 11 Melachos of Shabbos. So he writes that he experimented a little bit, and he said that if he found that with ovens, and you check with people who are, you know, who work with ovens, they'll tell you this is true. First of all, in general, thermostats from oven to oven are, you know, change in terms of the sensitivity. Some are much more sensitive than others. But there seems to be a common denominator between all thermostats, and that is when it's on a very, very low setting, like warm, the sensitivity of the thermostat is far more sluggish than when it's on high. Okay? So if it's just on set on warm, Rav Shimon Ida ran a test. He said he opened up the oven door, waited a little bit, and then closed it. He opened up the oven door, waited a little bit, and closed it. He kept doing that. I think he said it took like 6 to 8 times before the fire went on. So he asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, he said, is that statistically significant enough to be makel? That it took 6 to 8 times. So maybe I can say that my action of opening up the oven door is really disconnected from the fire going on. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, the tshuva is recorded in the back of the book and it ultimately made its way into the Gros Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that he thinks it's okay. So in such a case, it's a significant disconnect, that there's no connection between the action and the resulting malacha down the road. So basically, what you would have to do is you couldn't leave your oven cooking the roast or cooking the chicken in the scenario that I just described, but rather right before Shabbos you'd have to bring it down to warm, and then you can open up the oven and take the warm. You know, or some. I mean, if you want to experiment during the week and see. You know, how sluggish is it at 200, 250, you know, whatever it is, you have to check it out.
Do you have a timer on the oven until the timer shuts off?
If the thermostat is very sensitive. Again, but if it's on warm, you don't need the timer.
Right, so like it's just on, it's supposed to go off, and like time it so it goes off, like that's where you, like during, let's say it goes off during, you can't take it, you can't open the oven and take it.
Not if it's going to trigger the thermostat.
Unless the time is off.
Right, unless time is off. However, another teretz could be, is let's say you look in there and the oven's on. Let's say the fire's on, or the electricity, you know, the element is burning. So when you open it up then, you're also, it also would seem that you have a lot of room to be makel.
Unless it's on a boat.
Even then. If it's on, so what have I done?
Right, no, but if it's on a lower temperature and it's on,
if it's on a low temperature and it's off, then you could, then,
no,
right.
If the timer hasn't gone off and it's on a lower temperature, you open it, you said it's not as sensitive.
Right, okay. Correct. But I'm giving you even another alternative. I'm saying, let's say it's on a higher temperature and the oven's on, and so when you open the door, I didn't turn it on, it's already on, right? At this moment, like the same thing with refrigerators. There are some people, I don't know if you're aware of this, some people do not open refrigerators on Shabbos unless the compressor is already running. Like they'll wait, you know, they'll stand by that refrigerator until all of a sudden it kicks on, and then they open up the door. There are people who do that. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said you don't need to do that, but there are people who are mocking it for that. So, but if the oven is already on, then you should be able to open the door also.
So two questions. So you can open it up, like if it's on, you can open it up, take the food out, but you can't close it yet, right? That's...
To close, you open up the oven door, take out the food.
No, like you can open up and take it out, but you can't open it up, check out the food, and close it again. Because that's crazy. Right?
But it's fully cooked. The food in there is fully cooked, and I don't know if you can call Mexican Vasha in the same way as closing the lid. Closing an oven door with food that's in it, I don't know if that's the same type of level of Mexican Vasha as putting a lid on top of food. So I think there's much more room to make all.
And the thing with the refrigerator, the Indian doesn't apply there about cool and making it cooler.
Right, because it's because again,
with the refrigerator,
why is it that the compressor is off?
Okay? Yeah, because like the Indian doesn't apply the cooler.
The reason is because it's a double grumma on a dovish and miskaving sikresha denichale on a drabon. That's the bottom line. Okay, it's basically
so far removed.
You know, you open up the door. Your intent is not to make the compressor go on. You just want the food. So it's a dovish and miskaving. I don't know if it's a psikresha even, but let's say it is a psikresha. Let's say it definitely will go on. So, but still, the causation here was a double grama. One grama is, you know, grama meaning indirect action. One grama is that there's cold air leaving and hot air going in, right? And the second is how it affects the thermostat. The thermostat is also works on a grama system. At least the non-digital ones. The digital ones may not enjoy that heter, but in general, we're still makeable. It's at least the davish and a skain with a grama on a chad on a drabanan, which again we're makeable.
So maybe similar to Eitan's question, but if someone wants to be like, you know, same kind of chicken Friday night as we do Shabbos morning, you know, it's like, you know, double portion, one fast. Can they? And let's say the oven's on Shabbos, Sabbath mode, and it's fully cooked going into Shabbos and everything like that. They take it out, eat, serve from that pan Friday night, cover back up, put it in the fridge overnight, and then the next morning put it in the oven to reheat it.
To put it back in the oven is a problem. That you're not going to be able to get around. We're going to talk about why. But even the Sabbath mode ovens are not going to help for the Hachzar. But for Shehiyah, they're excellent. But we'll talk about it. I'm going to explain why I think it's a problem.
What about putting something on Shabbos day onto the plaza?
We're going to talk about it. Yeah.
So using it when it's warmer, when you have the temperature of warm, or if you're going to only open it when the fire is actually already on. Those only work when it's indoor side, or that you could open it up when it's indoor side, or
say again, if what?
The heter to use to keep it on warm, or to only open it when the heat is, the fire is on.
That's only when the food is already mavushal called sarko, when it's fully cooked. Right. Okay. So now you basically, I think, have a good idea about how to set up your food before Shabbos. And the same thing, by the way, with the cholent and the crock pot and the slow cooker. Make sure that the food is fully cooked. The cholent is fully cooked before Shabbos, and it's sitting inside this. This crock pot that has a blech, the two layers of tinfoil on the bottom and on the walls hanging over, covering the knobs. That's the best way and the right way to do it.
Two layers of foil?
Two layers of foil, unless it's very thick foil to begin with. There's some foil that's pretty thick. Okay, so now let's talk about Hachzara. Basically, what we're going to explore is can you put food back onto a heat source on Shabbos, whether it's on Friday night or on Shabbos day? You took it off. You took the food off the heat source. Let's say you served out chicken soup Friday night, or you had a craving for cholent Friday night. You took it, and how are you going to get the cholent back onto the heat source? Moreover, can there be a situation where you take food out of the refrigerator and put it onto a heat source? Can such a case occur? So basically, there's a Mishnah in Shabbos that teaches us the following law. The Mishnah says that it teaches us the din of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul B'Shabbos. That there's no violation of Bishul with food that's already cooked. And in other words, once it's fully cooked, you cannot violate Bishul. That's it. What's unclear from the Mishnah is that heter limited to davar yavesh or davar gush? Is it limited to solids, or does the heter extend even to liquids? So everyone agrees that at the very least solids enjoy this heter, but the machlokes is, do liquids enjoy this heter as well? So soup, chicken soup, if I cook it and then it cools down, so it's no longer hot, do I say Ein bishul, acha bishul, or not? Okay. If it's does everyone understand? Okay. If it's still hot, obviously, let's just be clear about this. If the chicken soup is still very hot, let's say it's more than yatsa lettuce, just to be really super clear about this, would there be any issur min haTorah to put it back on the fire? I mean, the food, let's say the chicken soup is fully cooked, it's still very hot, and to put it on the fire, is that called cooking the soup? That's not called cooking the soup. Okay, the only concern will be if it cools down. So the following is true. Rov Rishonim are makel, and they say that kemo she'ein bishul acha bishul b'davar yavesh, v'adinami ein bishul acha bishul b'davar lach. That just like we say, the heter of Ein Bishlach HaBishol by solid, so too we say this leniency of Ein Bishlach HaBishol B'davar Lach. That's what Rov Rishonim Paskin, including the Rambam. There is a minority of Rishonim that are machmir and say that the heter of Ein Bishlach HaBishol is limited to only solids. Only solids enjoy that leniency, but liquids do not. So how do we pass it? So one would have thought that okay, Azlina Basaruba, we'll follow the majority, and that's it. We'll be makel. But when you look at the poskim, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and you look at the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah were both machmir. So both the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't make a difference, Sfaradim and Ashkenazim in this case, Sfaradim and Ashkenazim are one mind principle that we say, l'halacha, that Ein Bishlach HaBishol, this heter only applies to solids, but liquids do not enjoy that leniency. And liquids revert back to a raw state if they've cooled down to some degree. We're going to talk about how much in a moment. The one exception to this are the Teimanim. The Teimanim paskin like the Rambam straight, and it's not unusual to find in a Teimani home that you'll have hot soup on Shabbos that they took out of the refrigerator that morning and put on a hot plate, let's say. Or on a keder agave keder, which we're going to talk about. But they put it onto a heat source that was in a permissible fashion, and they heated it up, and an Ashkenazi is allowed to eat in such a home. Because there's no kenasia for on the teman, he's following his psak, his mesorah. Okay, so and one cannot ask a teman, if you have a teimani next door neighbor, you can't ask the teimani to come over to your house and do it for you. That's not allowed. Okay, but for the teimani who does it in his own home, you can eat bread. Now, while the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah are of one mind about this din, and the Momachmir that they say, that Ein Bishlach HaBishol only applies to Davi Yavish, not to Davi Lach, they do argue with each other about when do we draw that line. When do we say that the liquid is considered to have cooled off? So the Shulchan Aruch says, when it drops below Yad Soleretto, then it is considered to have cooled off and it is reverted to its raw state. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber. Now, many poskim interpret that to mean l'chumra. In other words, remember we said there were two definitions of Yad Soleretto's bow? Right? But Moshe Feinstein said either it's 110 Fahrenheit or 160 Fahrenheit, or in the centigrade, it was either 43 or 71. So most people would assume that you go l'chumra on this, that if it drops below 71 degrees centigrade, or it drops below 160 degrees Fahrenheit, then that's it. Then it's too late. But I remember seeing in Rav Avadya Yosef, Rav Avadya assumed more of a cool on this one, that it has to drop below the lower temperature, 43 or 110. He says like 115 instead of 110. I think it's 115. But the point is, it's the lower temperature, so he gives a little bit more leeway there. That's the Mechaber. That's Rav Avadya Yosef's interpretation of the Mechaber. But Ashkenazim, hold like the Ramah, who says when has a liquid been considered to have cooled down? When it's nitstanein legamre. That's the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. When it entirely cools down, which means when it reaches room temperature. Room temperature, the poskim say, is nitstanein legamre. So the moment the liquid has reached room temperature, that's it. It has, for Ashkenazim, it has reverted to raw food, and it can no longer be returned to a heat source and be considered special. Okay. Now, just to analyze this Ramah for a second, there's a bit of a dispute in Achronim. Did the Ramah paskin this way be open by Dois? In other words, did he paskin l'chumra b'toras vadai, that it's really bishul daraisa, or is it like midin safa, is it chashash yisid daraisa, or no? Did the Ramah really paskin in principle, lekulo, that ein bishlach habishal even b'davar lach, but he was just machmer. It's a good chumra. So Rav Moshe Feinstein takes that approach. He takes the list. He feels that the Ramah is just it's a chumra, but really, really we paskin halacha v'lo l'maisa that ein bishlach habishal applies even to davar lach. But we're extra machmer. We have to be machmer. We do have to be careful. But he says that in principle we could, you know, in theory one would be able to make it. So the main nafkamina. So there's a tremendous nafkamina, and it probably happens a lot to people on Shabbos. And this is the nafkamina Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses. I don't know if it's ever happened to you. Imagine you're drinking a cup of tea or a cup of coffee Friday night. For dessert, and you're sitting, you have coffee or tea with your cake and your schmoozing, singing the Ritara, singing time goes by, you finished up your coffee or your tea, interested in another cup. So if you go over to the hot water urn, can you refill your teacup with hot water? What would be the problem?
There are
droplets still left, probably at the bottom of your teacup, and those droplets have cooled down entirely. In the phrase of the Ramah, what have they done? Nitzani legama. Okay, they've entirely cooled down. So can I put it underneath this the hot water urn, open up the tap, and refill it? Isn't it going to reheat it in mevashel and cook it? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that he thinks it's mutter. You're allowed to open up the tap and reheat these particles of water. Why? So he says it's based on a combination of two factors. He said, number one, we really paskin that ein bishalach abishal not only by davar yavesh, but even by davar lach. It's just that the Ramah was machmi. And he says, because of that, if we can be mitstarif this to another reason to be mekel, it's enough justification to be made entirely. What's that extra tzuruf? So when you open up the tap, are you intending to cook those water particles? Is that your intent? What do you want to do? Just refill the cup. So the cooking of those water particles, what would you call that again in halachic parlance? Well, davar she'eino miskaveh. It's not your intent to heat up the particles. It's an indirect byproduct. Your intent is to fill up the cup with hot water. The byproduct of that is that it's cooking, that it's going to cook it up. Is it a psikresha? Will it definitely occur?
Yes.
When I say psikresha, do people know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Does anyone here want me to explain it? Because I'll explain it. Yeah, okay. There's a Gemara that talks about a father who wants a ball for his son. And he doesn't have any plastic or rubber balls around to play, you know, for his son. So he takes a chicken, and he wants to cut off its head so that his son can play with the head of the chicken as the ball. And he runs around after the chicken, saying, "Sikresha v'loyomos. I want to remove, cut off its head, but I don't want it to die." It's on Shabbos. So that's what he's saying. What do we have to say about such a person? He's saying, "I don't want to kill the chicken. I just want the ball." It's like, I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie, really well dated, but The Frisco Kid. The Frisco Kid is about this this Polish rabbi who was sent to San Francisco to start to be the rabbi of the community there. It sounds like a really serious movie. It's a hilarious movie. So anyway, there's one scene where this rabbi is very hungry. He's running after a chicken. And he's basically quoting this Gemara, but he's just rephrased it a little bit. He says, he's running after the chicken saying, he says, "Don't run away, chicken, don't be afraid. I don't want to kill you. I just want to make you kosher." So basically, this father saying, "Sikresha v'leyomus." So it's a dovish animus guy. He's not intending to kill it, but it's definitely going to die. It's a ridiculous statement. He's definitely going to die. So it's also, so the phrase psikresha becomes a catchphrase for doing any action where the byproduct will definitely occur, even though it's unintended. Where the unintended byproduct will definitely occur has become known as sick ratio. Okay, davar she'en miskaven, sick ratio. You're not intending to do it, but it will definitely occur. So, a davar she'en miskaven, sick ratio. Okay, you drag, let's say, a plow that's sitting in the middle of your field. It's about to rain on Shabbos, and you don't want your plow to get rusty, and you want to drag it from the middle of the field into the shed, and the plow's heavy, but it happens to be in soft ground. But where you're going to drag it is going to ruin your field. Okay, so that's called the davar she'en miskaven, sick reisha, delo nichale. Okay, you're not happy with the result. You don't care about the result. You're not interested. It's not good for you. So we paskin that it's also midrabanan. Okay, min ha-Torah, it's mutar, but midrabanan it's also. But there is one opinion in Rishonim. His name is the Aruch. You guys have heard of the Aruch in Rishonim? It's a fairly famous Rishon. The Aruch says it's mutar. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says like this. He says, since we really paskin that ein bishul acha bishul v'davar yavesh and ein bishul acha bishul v'davar lach, but we're just machmir by lach, but really by lach it should be mutter. So he said, where it's a davar she'ein miskaven psik reisha delo nichale, we can rely on the aruch. You normally don't pass like the aruch. In this case, we can rely on him. So that's what's going on. It's a very simple act. Next time you see someone on Shabbos going over with a simple act of refilling his cup of with hot water, all of the sugyot should be running through your mind. That basically, are you interested in heating up? Is it nichale for you to heat up those little pieces of water, those little droplets of water? You couldn't care less, right? You have a whole cup of water. What do you care about that little droplet? So Moshe says that's a davar she'en miskaven sick reisha delo nichale, and therefore it's mutter. So since that's the repercussion of saying that the Ramah is just a chumrah. There's a chazonish, actually, another case where the chazonish says. He's very hesitant. He doesn't want to tell people this. He says, I'm telling you, psak, but I'm telling you, he says, don't do what I'm saying. It's halacha v'lo l'maisa. Do not do this. People were choshish. There was a certain hotel in the I think in the Catskills that people were a little worried about that they were doing this, nonetheless. What was going on? Basically, the Chazon Ish said, let's say I have chicken soup. And I cooked it up before Shabbos. I put it in the refrigerator. So it's fully cooked, now it's in the refrigerator. He says, on Shabbos, let's say I put it near a heat source, and the chicken soup will rise above room temperature, but will not start cooking. Okay? It's not so close that it'll get very hot, but it's close enough that it will rise above room temperature. So he says, look! It's no longer room temperature. So it's not raw. It's only when it's in Stein and Lagomer. So he said, in theory, maybe one can make such an argument and say that it's no longer Nikar as something that's raw. It doesn't look like something raw anymore. And therefore, after it reaches above room temperature, I could slide it closer or put it onto a hot plate, and then I'll heat it up that way. And there was a certain hotel years ago, I think like in the 1960s and 70s, that was serving hot soup on Shabbos, and it wasn't like on the stovetop all night. So people were like, they were suspected. They were doing the Chazanish heter that was not l'maisa. And you're not supposed to, we don't do this. It's not what we do. Oh, he says that when you fill up your teacup, the little droplets of water that are going to cook up, he said, I'm not really so interested in them.
What is like nichalei?
That I'm happy about it. So I'm really interested in. But the Stallone nichalei, I really don't care. So he says, who cares about the droplets of water? Okay. Is there another case that we can talk about this? I heard, I have not seen this inside, but I heard that Rav Avad Yosef recently came out with a psak, being makel with the following case. If you guys know this, let me know if I'm making a mistake. I'm doing right. But this is what I heard. I heard that he said that you can take a chicken soup out of the refrigerator, if it's fully cooked, put it on a hot plate that's currently cold, but is on a timer that will kick on. So, like, you know, it's Shabbos morning, you wake up, you take the chicken soup out of the refrigerator, you put it on the hot plate, stone cold at this time, but the timer is going to go on, and the hot plate's going to cook the soup.
Who says it?
Rav Avad Yosef. And he said, it's okay, because really, Ein Bishalach HaBishol V'Dover Lach, just like Ein Bishalach HaBishol V'Dover Yovesh, and it's on a timer, it's not Nikar, and da 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 da. Am I right? You heard about that? So, again, I can definitely say, in Ashkenazic circles, that has not been, other Ashkenazi postmen have not said that, but that's something Rav Avadia said. So for Spartan, the Paschal for Avadia, you can do that.
I thought that based on Shulchan Aruch, who says that that the temperature that it has to drop below is Yatsum Hebo, that the Shulchan Aruch believes that there actually is a necessary re-cooking liquids. So isn't it? So
I'm saying Rav Avadia.
It is strange that Rav Avadia.
His interpretation was a little different. It's not clear necessarily from the Shulchan Aruch. His interpretation apparently is.
Why was the Chazon Ish so against his idea?
He was saying in learning, you know, like he was saying in theory this should be okay, but we don't do this. He said, like Jewish practice, you know, this Ashkenazic practice is not this way. So this minhag, you know, you go by the minhag. One last thing, I want to tell you another story about this type of case, but this way, way l'chumra. There was a boger from our yeshiva who emailed me the shaila. Years ago, he and a couple of his chevra were eating together. The whole group of people were eating in the community. It was all singles. It was men and women, and everyone was bringing their own food, and all from people. And the chicken soup or the soup, whatever the soup was. Was from a woman who was Ashkenazi, and she took it out of the refrigerator and put it onto the hot plate and warmed it up. So when he was served the soup, he didn't know what to do. He found out about moments before he got the soup, and he didn't know what to do. So he decided to just wait and talk and schmooze until the chicken soup reached room temperature, at which point he wasn't benefiting at all from it being heated up, and then he ate it that way. That's what he did. But he emailed me, wanted to know, was he being overzealous? Could he have eaten it hot? What's it then? So when I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, maybe there's room to be makel. After all, maybe someone will be embarrassed. Number two, really, like Rav Moshe said, most Rishonim really paskin that ein bishlach habishul b'davar lach, just like by Yavesh. And let's add to this, the girl probably didn't know what she was doing in this case, obviously. So it was a shogeg, on a chumra. So maybe it could be makel. I wasn't sure, but I was thinking. But I went over to Rav Lichtenstein. I asked him what he thought. So Rav Lichtenstein said, absolutely, he did the right thing. He cannot, it's also to eat, because we assume, he said, this is what he said to me, he said, we assume that even though the Ramah, you can argue that maybe he's being machmir, but the minog of Ashkenazim is to treat it like an Issa D'oraisa. That's what he said. So therefore he said the right thing to do in such a case was to be machmir. It's interesting. I've seen other posts who not necessarily say that way, but Rav Lichtenstein was machmir. Yeah. Well, it was already cooked before Shabbos, so in other words, it was a pre-cooked food. And now that it, right? Now that
no,
it's.
I'm saying if there's really prohibitional, achardishal, or whatever it is, then you're. Meaning, it's still the same food that there was a misrepresentation to it, so it
No, but he's not. There's no hanah. There's the iser. The rabbanon on ma'aseh Shabbos. If a person does an iser of ma'aseh Shabbos, they did a malacha on Shabbos, so you can't benefit from the malacha. But here, how's he benefiting? Right. If let's say the girl had just taken the soup out of the refrigerator and left it out until it reached room temperature. If she just left it out, you know, on the counter, it would be all the same. You didn't seem like, you know, what hannah is he getting?
I'm saying he's still having a hannah in the soup. He's still getting hannah from the soup itself.
But not from the malacha. No, there's no hannah from the malacha. That's the point. All right, so we'll stop here. So just, can you just remind me that for next year, I want to discuss, we were doing Hachzorah. So we did, we just talked about Bishlach HaBishl and B'davar Yavish and B'davar Lach. I want to discuss with you the difference between the Din D'Oraisa and the two Cheshashos Rabbanon. Okay, can you just come and remind me?